Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
Thank you to BQE, the makers of BQE Core, for their support of this episode. BQE Core is the software that makes it easy to manage your projects and people for maximum productivity and ultimate profitability. Learn more at bqe.com. Context and Clarity has been called a community-based pro practice masterclass for architects. It's awfully high praise, but since we began this journey back in April of 2020, we've certainly grown into a community of small firm architects, all focused on what matters most to their success. And by the way, it doesn't matter if you're the employee of a firm that's dreaming of going out on your own, or you've owned your own firm for 26 years. There's something here for everyone. And that's where you come in. Thanks for listening, and welcome to the Context and Clarity podcast. Every week, we have a conversation with an expert or a thought leader on things that matter most to the success of architects just like you. Then we go backstage with someone from our community and we talk about what we learned, what our biggest takeaways were, and how we're going to apply what we heard to our own businesses. In this episode, we had two guests. We talked with Aaron Pellegrino and Jake Rudin. Aaron and Jake are both Cornell-educated architects. They've both worked and taught in the profession. Their paths diverge where Aaron still practices and teaches while Jake has left the profession to apply his training and his skills and his perspective to research, development, and design of sportswear at Adidas. Together, Aaron and Jake founded Out of Architecture to help their clients explore and understand the value of their skills and education both in the profession and outside of architecture. I had to take an unexpected trip to Atlanta, but I had to find a Starbucks where I could have this conversation because I think what Aaron and Jake do for their clients at Out of Architecture actually has much larger implications. I really believe that what they're touching on is the true value of an architect. You'll just have to listen to our conversation and see if you think the same. As usual, Catherine McPhail joined me for this conversation with Aaron Pellegrino and Jake Rudin, and again backstage afterward. Catherine is my co-host, and she's an architect and a podcaster from Arlington, Massachusetts. In addition to Context and Clarity, Catherine hosts Talking Home Renovations with the House Maven, and she's the CEO of Demios Architects. As always, I'm looking forward to talking about our takeaways from this conversation. So let's go backstage and listen in as Catherine and I talk about our conversation with Aaron Pellegrino and Jake Rudin from Out of Architecture. I've really been intrigued by what Aaron and Jake are doing at Out of Architecture. You know, they talk about exploring the value of what you do, of your education and the skills that you've developed and things like that. You know, and they work on that with clients in the context of career consulting. But I think that there's actually bigger implications for what they're talking about. I think it takes me back to our conversation a couple of weeks ago with Eitan Sarfati, where he says, remember back to architecture school, you know, the things that you learned and the things that you did. And you know, I think the place where both of these conversations cross is that what Jake and Aaron are talking about and what Eitan are talking about, I think they're talking about the actual value of an architect, the actual value that an architect can bring to a project. So I didn't want to miss the conversation. And I wasn't disappointed with the conversation either.
This week, I thought, I'm going to sign up for their coaching or whatever it is, their consulting, see what else I can do. Because I feel like, in a way, architects are kind of always whining about how people don't value us. So hearing people say, well, you have all these problem solving skills and you have all these other skills that can be applied anywhere, it made me feel kind of appreciated.
Yeah. And I think, to me, the beauty of what they're talking about, which I know is a struggle for some in the profession, and it's outside of the box for some in the profession. But I really think that the beauty that they're talking about is, or the beauty of what they're talking about is that you really need to look at your proficiencies and your skills, obviously, but also your passion and things like that. And I even if we're talking about, say, your own small firm, in this, you know, anybody that knows me, and Catherine certainly knows this, you know, that one of the things that maybe bothers me a little bit about the profession is there's so many people that are practicing in a certain way because this is the way that we've always done it, right? This is the traditional practice of architecture. And we've got five phases of design services, or seven or nine or three or whatever. And I don't think it's a leap at all to take what Aaron and Jake are doing and say, okay, I really love being an architect. I really love having my own small firm. What can I learn from what they're talking about and what they're doing at Out of Architecture? Well, why don't you look at what you're actually doing for your clients and say, you know what, this is what I'm best at. These two things are what I'm really, really good at and where I bring the most value to a project. Why don't I focus on that? Why don't I build a business around that? You know, there is nothing in the world that says that you have to provide five phases of design services, right? Everything from feasibility through construction admin, or, you know, whatever your phases are. You know, why not actually build a business around those things that you're really good at and that you really love? And that's what I'm talking about when I think there's larger implications to what they're talking about, and not to diminish anything that they're talking about. I think what they're doing is super intriguing. One, I think it's great for the future of the profession. It aligns with a lot of the things that we talk about, but I think there are ways that you can take what they're exploring and actually apply it to your business. If you say, hey, I don't want a job. I don't want Out of Architecture. I don't want these things. I just want to be an architect. Great. Learn from what they're talking about and apply it to your actual, you know, your present situation, I guess.
Like, you don't actually have to go all the way to a different industry to learn something from them. I mean, I just like that they saw this need for people to be fulfilled in a different way and are helping people out with that. And one of them went in a different direction, and one of them is in a pretty traditional situation otherwise, besides this side hustle. Is this a side hustle, would you say?
Yeah, I would say. Yeah. And I think that's important to understand. Jake has left, right? He's left the profession. He works for Adidas. They talk a lot about, I think Jake uses this term maybe more than Aaron does, but they talk about architecture adjacent positions. Now, I don't know exactly, you know, is Adidas architecture adjacent? I don't know if you would define it that way, but he's using the skills that he learned in school and that he developed working in architecture to do the R&D and design at Adidas. But to your point, yeah, I mean, Aaron teaches pro practice. She is a licensed or registered architect, whatever her state calls it, or multiple states, wherever she is, or wherever she's licensed. And she has a
relatively traditional architecture practice with a business partner. And that's where they come from, right? That's the two, they met in school. They're great friends. And they've taken different paths. And I love this exploration that they're doing. I love it. We talked about this, I think we talked about this when we were live. Things kind of run together a little bit. Maybe it was before we went live, but NAB, the accreditation organization here in the United States, has a relatively new focus on, they call it path to licensure. In my opinion, that's the wrong focus. I think it's the path to the profession. I think part of that is path to school, you know, what you do in school, path after school, and that's where I call it path from the profession too, possibly. And I think they're 100% fulfilling that goal or that need, whatever it is. You know, I teach pro practice as well, and I don't know, I have 20 students or something a semester. I'm not exactly sure what the average number is, but every single one of those students is wondering where and exploring where is their place going to be in the profession, or is it even going to be in a traditional role in the profession? And I start out every semester saying, you don't have to have a traditional role. You don't have to work for a traditional firm. There's lots of different things that you can do. And that's exactly what Heron and Jake are exploring.
Yeah, but I think you're right in saying what you were saying before, and that anybody could benefit from what they do, in that they can think about what they actually enjoy and what they are good at. And knowing what our strengths are, I think, is really important. And it's hard to remember that we have strengths and preferences when, as small firm owners, we have to do everything involved. So we have to do everything from the beginning to the end, and maybe we stop thinking about whether we are good at it or whether we enjoy it or anything, because it doesn't matter really if we enjoy it or not. We have to finish the CDs, which is the thing I don't enjoy.
Well, and I think it's not being able to take stock of your skill set, right? It's just not what becomes the focus, especially in school, but also in the practice. It's just like, just get it done, right? You may be really good at producing the drawings, or, you know, maybe you put the presentations together really well because you've got a graphic eye. None of that ever gets, for the most part, acknowledged beyond this is what it takes to get the work done. But I think a skill audit is obviously incredibly useful, both to know what you're good at and also know what you're not. You know, you don't know what you don't know, and therefore when you need to skill up, you need to skill up. I just think we're, you know, more we can be more whole human beings and more whole practitioners and more whole designers and creatives if we recognize all these other facets of our skills and our life and our overall culture that we can bring to the skills that we bring to the world.
It's been a while since I've been in the practice, but I think that's exactly what happens. I spent about 10 years, maybe a little more than 10 years at a firm, and we spent a decent amount of time every week, every year, whatever, trying to figure out how to play to our strengths. And we knew that people came to us because of design, and people, that was our strength. And, you know, just in a nutshell, and our weakness, especially on the business side, I don't think it was a weakness in terms of our technical skill or anything like that, but we were slow at construction documents, and that's definitely not where we were profitable. So we spent a lot of time exploring how do we become a design only firm, you know, put that in quotes. Because that firm had been around for 15 or 20 years before I joined it, and it had grown up into what it was. It's still a small firm. I think there were about 7 of us, but it had grown up into what it was because this is the way that you practice architecture. And yeah, and I think that's it, right? That this is the way that we've always done it, which continues to blow my mind. Because for a profession filled with some of the most creative people in the world, we have zero creativity when it comes to the profession itself.
Maybe that's why, though, because if we all started to get creative with how things are done, it would be like a disaster. We just like, who knows what's happening, you know? So that's why it always has to be, you know, I had to work all-nighters at my boss's office, and so now you do too. And I was treated badly, so I'm going to treat you badly, or whatever it might be. Like, we can't embrace individualism when it comes to practice, or else who knows what might happen. Maybe that's why.
I think that's a good point. And I think that's, you know, you mentioned I had to do this, so you should have to do it too, which we've talked about that before. That boggles my mind too. You know, everybody I know, I'm going there. I was going to avoid going there, but everybody that I know that has kids has said at some point in their life, I want things to be better for my kids. Whatever that means, right? Whatever their context is, you know, they say some version of that. And then they'll turn around and say, I paid my dues, so you have to pay your dues. They do the exact opposite in that context. And that turns into, in my opinion, that turns into something really toxic in the profession. But I think, you know, to the point that we're making here, it's also not pushing the profession forward. Right, we're looking backwards instead of looking forward, and that's problematic. Right? When everything's evolving around us and changing around us, and we're looking backwards, you know, at some point you're going to run headlong into a concrete barrier or something, I suppose. Let's take a quick break to share more about our sponsors, Systems and Standard Operating Procedures. You already know that's how to build a profitable business and find the freedom that you want. You need systems and procedures, but you struggle with choosing which systems you need the most and how to implement those systems quickly so that you can get back to doing what you love to do the most. The Designing Your Business Masterclass series was created by acclaimed architect and business consultant Douglas Teager, FAIA, to help fellow architects and engineers run their firms more profitably while maintaining a healthy work-life balance. Douglas grew from a solo practitioner to becoming managing partner of his 30-plus person firm, and then later sold his firm so that he can do what he does today, helping architects be more successful at Teager Consulting. On the third Wednesday of every month, Douglas dives deep into an essential topic that will strengthen the profitability of your firm and make it sustainable for growth in the years to come. Register now for the next Designing Your Business Masterclass with Douglas Teager at bqe.com/masterclass. And then start implementing powerful systems for the profitability you need and the freedom you want. Every live masterclass session includes AIA continuing education credit. And when you visit bqe.com/masterclass, you'll have access to the full library of past sessions on demand. The Designing Your Business Masterclass is free. It's brought to you by our friends at BQE, the makers of BQE Core, the software that makes it easy to manage your projects and your people for maximum productivity and ultimate profitability. Register now for the next Designing Your Business Masterclass at bqe.com/masterclass. That's bqe.com/masterclass. And now, let's get back to the conversation.
I'm surprised there's not bigger entities, businesses, trying to help architects find a new place in the world. Because it seems like we are trained to think differently. People complain a lot about schools not preparing us for immediate employment in construction work. Industry, right? But we are trained in all these things that maybe aren't, you know, it's just this way of thinking, a problem solving, more creative way of thinking that we're not going to be able to use when we get to work. They were saying that was heartbreaking in another interview that they had, but it is true. It is heartbreaking. And everybody I know felt it when they left, all my classmates. We'd all mention it one time or another, and it's not what we thought it would be. But then I thought, well, I could do this or that. I could do other things. But then not having the ability or the knowledge myself to present myself as a asset to another employer who wasn't in architecture. So I could have, I really could have used some help doing that.
Yeah, I think there's so much resistance to change in the profession. And one term that they use, that Aaron and Jake use, is the noun problem. And that's real, right? A lot of us do. I was working with a client and, you know, it bubbled up in our conversation. So for many in the profession, they're tying their identity to the word architect and identifying themselves as an architect. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? And we're not trying to diminish anything, but when it becomes such, so closely related to your self-identity that you can't remove yourself from it. Again, how do you move forward if you can't get out, you can't even think outside of that box? And with this client that I was working with, they had two noun problems. One was architect, or one is architect. And again, there's nothing wrong with being an architect or anything like that. And it's hard earned and all of those things. But so wrapped up in being an architect and not being able to let that go in even the smallest sense. And then their other noun problem was business owner.
They didn't want to take it, or they didn't want to own it?
They did not want to let go of it. Where, you know, I obviously, because it's a client, I can't get too much into that conversation. But where we identified that a real opportunity for them would be to let go of one or both of those terms. I mean, a real, real opportunity, but they could not get themselves to that point where they can let go.
I mean, I feel that when you mentioned like me giving up that word architect, I do feel a little fluttery. Like, I don't, it's weird. I don't know why. Do other people feel that same way? Do doctors, lawyers, or philosophers, or any of those artists?
I imagine. Yeah, I don't think a lot of the things that we're talking about are probably not unique to the profession, right? This is just our context. This is, you know, we're talking about architects and architecture, and our community is generally small firm architects. But so I suppose it probably exists outside of the profession.
I feel like we are, I mean, it's just because I know architects more than I know accountants, or more than I know other noun related people. But I feel like architects are, do you still call yourself an architect?
I do not, and I never have, because I never sat for an exam. So if I called myself an architect, because I'm educated, I'm trained, I've worked in the profession, right? But I've never been licensed. So there are people that would rightly take me to task for calling myself an architect. I'm not a licensed architect. I made a conscious decision, and this will bother some people as well. I made a conscious decision not to become a licensed, or here in Indiana, it's a registered architect. And there are people that have told me to my face that that's a problem. I don't think that's a problem at all. Looking back at this conversation with Aaron and Jake, what I realize is that anybody that would tell me that has a noun problem.
Mm-hmm. They've got a couple problems.
Yeah, they've got a couple of problems, but they have that noun problem, right? I think there's a huge question. Does everybody that goes to architecture school need to become an architect?
No, I would say not. I mean, we don't need that many architects, do we?
I think just on a philosophical plane, right? Does everybody in architecture school need to become an architect? No, I think that would be a tragedy. Because I think what you learn in architecture school is critical thinking, creative thinking, and design thinking. The world needs that beyond the built environment.
Yes, that definitely. That's their whole point, I think. And a lot of us want to change the world, or thought we did in school, or were told that we could, or whatever it might have been. And maybe some of us can do that outside of the profession of architecture.
One of the things that is super common that I think clients bring to us is, you know, we're looking through roles and they'll say, well, I don't have any, you know, any agency experience. Or someone will come and they'll say, you know, well, I'm such a generalist. And to me, that is like one of the proudest things you can call yourself, you know, and I would lean into that by saying, you know, I'm an expert generalist. I know a lot about a lot of things, not fully, you know, mastery maybe in any one. But at the same time, you know, when we go back to that agency question, I mean, you might consider yourself an architect and a business person, but if someone comes to you and is part of your architectural project, landscape is involved, you're gonna dive in and do it. If interiors are involved, if working through a kind of, you know, larger scoping or maybe master planning, or, you know, these are all areas that aren't necessarily the responsibility of the architect. And over the years have been relegated, I think, to more and more consultants and more specialists. So maybe architects feel like, well, you know, I shouldn't be getting into that, or I'm not qualified, or, you know, maybe I just don't hold the right title. But then you start to get even farther out into, you know, visual branding and graphic design and marketing and all of these things that inherently architects are pretty good at because they're creatives. I think we don't practice them, and therefore we end up not being very good at them in the long run.
I have heard Aaron talk about the reality that architecture can't solve everything, right? Built environment can't solve everything, but there's potential that architects could, applied in different situations and in different fields and things like that. And that's one of the more important concepts, I think, to come out of what they do and what they talk about. Because you're right, you know, how were there any of us that were in architecture school, whenever that was, whether it was in 2000 or 1990 or 1970, were there any of us that were in architecture school that didn't have some sort of aspirational ideas about changing the world?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I think that's kind of what we were encouraged to think.
Yeah. So I, you know, by extension, I think, okay, you thought about changing the world. If everybody that thought about changing the world that went through architecture school said, I can only do that by designing a house or a museum or memorial or whatever, isn't that an incredibly limiting point of view?
Yes, and also very difficult to achieve. I've had way more impact doing, you know, like, say, local politics, getting involved with that sort of thing, or with helping my town with planning, or in various institutions I've been involved with, helping them with capital campaigns and other things. I mean, I think those have been more helpful than any of the houses I've designed in terms of the world.
I think those are great examples. Places places where you can apply everything that you've learned, all the knowledge that you've gained and developed and skills and all those things that have a greater impact than, and again, I'm not trying to diminish the profession or anything, but have a greater impact than quote unquote just architecture, just the built environment.
Mm-hmm. There's a big world out there. So, and people who aren't happy doing what we're doing for whatever reason, we architects, I mean, there are other possibilities. So I think that's a hopeful thing and a way for people to really feel like they are, I don't know, kind of, they have a different future, a different fate, I guess, than just, not just, than being architects. And that's okay. But like you said, it's hard to give it up.
Yeah.
I don't think I can give it up. Once you're licensed, I don't think you can you? I feel like I'm stuck.
Yeah, that's another discussion, probably another topic for another day. Gets maybe into legal and insurance aspects, but,
exactly. Risk management.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good way to sum it up. Yeah, risk management. But I think maybe a good way to wrap our heads around the whole conversation with Aaron and Jake and what they're doing is that it is aspirational, right? It is helping people play to their strengths and find a place where they can have the most impact, as well as, you know, the most passion and the most pleasure and all of those things in what they do. But I think that's an important takeaway from the conversation, and I hope that's what most people get out of it. What they're talking about is very aspirational, and I think if there were widespread adaptation of what they're doing it out of architecture, and maybe that takes out of architecture to grow and grow and grow and touch more and more people's lives and careers, I think would be a huge positive benefit to the profession and the world. I mean, that's my takeaway, I think. Thank you to BQE, the makers of BQE Core, for their support of this podcast episode. Visit bqe.com/masterclass to register for the next Designing Your Business Masterclass. Well, what did you think? Did you hear something in there that you can use in your practice today? If you are so inspired by this conversation that you'd like to watch the entire Context and Clarity Live episode, head on over to the Entree Architect YouTube channel. There's a playlist there that has all of the full Context and Clarity Live episodes. And if you want more of the Context and Clarity podcast delivered to you every week, give us a thumbs up and subscribe wherever you consume podcasts. If you like content like this, check out Gable Media. It's a multimedia network for people that care about the built environment, and it's the home of Context and Clarity. With Gable's growing family of podcasts and video channels, I know you'll find something there that interests you. You can learn more at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. And one last thing before you go. If the topic of today's episode is of particular interest to you, join me over on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern inside the Entree Architect Community Facebook group. That's where every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern, I host Context and Clarity Conversations, and we take topics like this, and we dig deeper. We have a conversation in real time to try to find more clarity around the things that matter most to you. So thanks for listening. I hope our time together has inspired you to think about your community and your practice and how you can support those around you. We'll be back here again next week, and in the meantime, I hope you'll join me and the Entree Architect community on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern so that we can help each other find more clarity around the topics that matter most, no matter what your context is.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and this sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.